Christmas, 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 Christmas,
Christmas, Christmas,
Christmas, Christmas, Christmas,
Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas,
Welcome to the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Today we have a very festive theme. Christmas!
Merry Christmas, baby! Hubbard a doodle daggle doodle doo!
I've decided to have my Christmas party early this year. And if you've ever had a Christmas party, you probably understand why. It's hard to have a Christmas party actually around Christmas time, because so many other people are having parties, the turnout suffers. I have the added problem that Paris always throws her party the same day as mine, trying to steal away my guests. It's never worked. My guests always attend my party. But they come bitter because they know what gift bags they're missing out on. And let me tell you, they get to be some mean drunks. You don't want a bunch of bitter New York types telling you what they really think of you at 2 a.m. on a cold December night. Stuff gets smashed, and I end up sleeping naked in an alley in the fetal position, tears freezing to my face like so many salty popsicles. All I wanted to do was have a party. This year it's going to be different. I'm having my party early, and with her engagement plans faltering, Paris is in no party mood. But I had nothing to do with that. I don't have friends in Greece working to poison her marriage plans. What are you, crazy? Here's your tinfoil hat, Betty, man. You can't prove anything. I'm like glass. Nothing's gonna stick to me. So grab a drink. There's plenty. We got amaretto, mudslides, eggnog, Irish coffee, Jack, jello shots. And, you know, for a couple of bucks, I bet the stripper in the next room would let you do a body shot even. There's lots to eat. We're gonna play wine bag later. And don't worry, I got plenty of music. This won't be like that last party. I promise you, I will only play Roxette's Joyride once. Twice. Three, and that's it. So let's get this party started, okay? Put your bag down and move those feet to the beat. Merry Christmas, Trips, Bobby!
When Jesus died for man's sins, he even died for man's sins. No! Tries her best to celebrate. I'm afraid this song may grate on the friends of Sharon Tate, but even Squeaky Fromm loves Christmas.
Bye. gotta go to bed. If they're not in bed by the time Santa comes to this house, I'm gonna tell them to go right by this house.
One Christmas in New York, when I was working at a company we'll call Evil Incorporated, the department I was in decided to compel its members to participate in their Secret Santa game. The rules were thus: you drew the name of the person you were buying a gift for in secret, and you were not allowed to divulge the person's name. You were also limited to $25, and a handy list of gift suggestions was emailed around, generally consisting of the usual gifts you'd buy for a coworker you didn't care about, gift certificates, etc. Since it was my first year at Evil, and I usually love wrapping presents, I was eager to participate. Not knowing what to get the person whose name I drew, I simply purchased what I assumed everyone would like, or at least be able to use: a gift card for a large book chain that also carries music and movies. Since the gift itself was rather generic, I made the wrapping extraordinary. I got a large box and six smaller boxes. In one of the small boxes, I put the gift card. In each of the other five, I put a fish that I'd cut out from pieces of red paper. Then I put the smaller boxes into the larger box and put a tag on it that read something like, "Within this box, there are six smaller boxes. Only one contains the true gift, and every other box is a red herring. You have exactly 120 seconds to find the gift. If you succeed, all of your Christmas dreams will come true. But if you fail, you will turn into a goon." Or something like that. In the end, the big box was so big that I had to take a cab into work rather than drag this box onto the subway. I couldn't wait until the day it would be opened. As for my own gift, I mercilessly advertised the already obvious fact that I love Starbucks and Barnes & Noble and would like nothing more than a gift card for either. In fact, I even put a funny tongue-in-cheek newsletter together and distributed it to my small department, where I listed good and bad gifts. The good gifts came straight from the list that was emailed to everyone: gift card, metro card, scarf. The bad gifts were preposterous, and no one would give them. I mentioned Starbucks card and Barnes & Noble gift card in my newsletter and bolded them. I figured anyone with half a brain who chose my name would know exactly what to get for me. The day to exchange gifts finally rolled around, and I was excited. The person who had my gift opened it first. It went great until they actually found my gift, at which point you'd think that I had given them six real rotting fish. They attempted to sound pleased with it, but it was clear they were disappointed. Frankly, I couldn't understand why. The gift card was the proper amount, and really, what kind of gift could you expect from someone at the office? I was perplexed by their reaction, but figured that at least I'd have my own gift card from Barnes & Noble or Starbucks, and that would be fine. I was the penultimate person to open my gift. I found it on the table, a card wrapped in a brown paper bag. While I was genuinely surprised that the person took such little care to wrap my present, I was nonetheless glad that the gift itself would surely be something I could use. I opened the card eagerly and was stunned at what it contained. Staring back at me from the pages of this card, in a brown paper bag, was something I could never have foreseen being given: a $25 Metro card. My face literally went blank, as if I'd received some tragic news that was too much to process at one time. I was absolutely dumbstruck. My shock and disappointment filled the room, and someone in the department remarked,
"It was on your newsletter. You said Metro card."
I didn't even try to explain why I had included it. I merely sat down, speechless. In the end, however, my gift wasn't the worst. That fate fell to the person after me, who, in spite of having given someone else a nice and thoughtful gift, in turn received nothing. Since the person who was to buy for her had been out for a while, she got nothing. It was never satisfactorily explained how this wasn't caught before gift exchange day, but I had fun telling her later that she got the shaft. Sometime later, it became clear to me from a handwriting analysis that the person who had chosen my name for a gift was probably the most likely in the office to indeed have less than half a brain. And if they did have more than half of one, then the heavy medication they presumably were on rendered the point moot. So while I could understand how this person would have gotten me such a thoughtless gift, I could not excuse it. And I have never participated in another Secret Santa game since. Wait. Since I'm talking about Evil Incorporated, let me mention something about their holiday decorations. The atmosphere of the company would lead you to believe that they wanted to recognize all holidays and not show distinct preference for Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever. The actual visual of the company, however, told a different story. When you walked into the building, the first thing you noticed, as it was impossible not to notice, were the two enormous Christmas trees flanking the entrance. They had to be at least 30 feet tall. As you went up the floors, the next thing you noticed were the lavish Christmas trees in the reception areas of each floor. What you might miss, however, was the lone menorah on only one of the floors. Not just because it was small, but also because it was so modern and artsy that it barely resembled a menorah at all. It was clear that the company's Hanukkah display was so dwarfed by the Christmas one as to be virtually invisible. I mentioned this to a friend at the time and asked him whether I should submit my suggestion for how to rectify this disparity. I thought that there should be a Hanukkah representative in the building's lobby, possibly sitting in a cardboard box with literature to pass out to anyone interested. And every day around noon, there should be a Hanukkah moment, where a woman in a circus ringleader outfit carries a rescued dog out into the lobby, and loud klezmer music plays, causing the dog to run around in circles in fright, eventually making a mess on the floor and collapsing, at which point the woman would yell, "Yay, Hanukkah!" and remove her top. I thought it would be an appropriate display, considering how the company seemed to regard Hanukkah displays. My friend thought that the Hanukkah moment sounded wonderful, but advised me not to submit it. And after the Secret Santa fiasco, I found that I couldn't care any more about holiday displays at Evil Incorporated. For the past few years, when I've given out Christmas cards, I've made them myself. I've always found it fun to make my own cards, and people seem to like getting a handmade card instead of one that came in a $200 for $1 package at Walmart or Barnes & Noble. I'd like to share a couple of card ideas I've used in the past. If you like them, you can copy them. And when you give out your cards, everyone will love you. Here goes. The first time I made my cards, they were very simple. I took some photographs of things like me looking like a greasy bum and a porcelain Santa doll emerging from a toilet. Then I glued these pictures to some red paper and hand-wrote a message inside. It read, "Rosebud was a sled,
and Santa Claus is dead.
Merry Christmas, Ed."
They went over famously. Note that if your name's not Ed, you might want to change that part when you do the card. Another great card I did was my Prozac Christmas card. On the front, it had a green and off-white pill with the words, "It's a Christmas like no other." That built up
mystery.
Inside was the message, which was actually part of the lyrics for a song that my friend Mark Baratelli made up
and never finished.
It was called Prozac Christmas, and it went like this.
It's a Prozac Christmas, a session of glee, no depression for me. A Prozac Christmas, this Christmas time, how sublime it will be.
I wrote that on one side of the card for the message, but opposite the message, I put a recipe
for a Prozac drink.
I called it Cranzac, and it mixed vodka, cranberry, Prozac capsules, and a mint garnish.
But yours can be anything you like.
There, those are just a couple of ideas for you.
Now go make your cards, Beeblets. Merry Christmas!
through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way.
Too much coins with him.
Lay down. I'm gonna cover you up, sugar. It's gonna be all right. Ooh,
that sounds good.
Yeah.
Santa Claus. Go straight to the ghetto. Hitch up your reindeer. Go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus. Go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus. That's all brother needs. So Santa Claus.
And now Ed Shep presents
Observations by Ed Shep.
Have you ever noticed how some songs feel like Christmas songs when technically they're not? Either they reference Christmas somehow, or they were playing at Christmas time and got associated with it in your mind. Obviously, I'm not talking about songs like Sleigh Ride and Winter Wonderland, which aren't specifically about Christmas, but are so associated with it that they might as well be. I mean regular songs that just feel like Christmas songs and that you listen to at Christmas time. I call them un-Christmas songs, mostly because if there's a generally accepted name for these songs, I don't care what it is. I have two that I always come back to. The first is pretty straightforward. The Bangles version of Hazy Shade of Winter. The jingle bells in the song, the reference to the Salvation Army band, and the references to winter make it feel for me like it's set at Christmas time. Also, I tend to like Christmas songs that have a little darkness, so I love to think of this one as a holiday song. My other un-Christmas song is less obvious. It's this.
All these accidents that happen follow the dot.
Bjork's Jöga, or Joga, Jiga. Shishu. We'll just call it State of Emergency, since the actual title is in a made-up language called Icelandic, which isn't even spoken anyway, so the word doesn't even have a real pronunciation. I associate the song with Christmas because I was playing it on my car boombox when driving to have dinner with my friend Paige one Christmas day in Atlanta. I wasn't playing it as a holiday song per se, but something about it just made it totally work in my mind as a Christmas song. It has a snowy, mysterious feel to me, like something that I would want to hear if I were running through a lush Nordic pine forest, seeking a fair sleeping maiden to awaken with my kiss and then steal her purse, which of course would contain only a poison apple that would turn me into a wolf until I could capture a young child to sell to the local witch in exchange for my humanity and a bag of golden licorice. But I think we're getting into Vespertine territory here. So, those are my two un-Christmas songs. What are yours?
Observations by Ed Shep.
Hello, you fool.
Again?
Oh.
Sunrise fresh. That is what I want my life to smell like. I want my life to be sunrise fresh, like that fabric softener. But you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking if I did this Prozac Christmas card, Well, first of all, I'd have to be very touchy. I'd have to ask people two questions at work. I'd have to be like, do you celebrate Christmas? And if they go yes, I'd be like, are you taking Prozac? And I'd be like, give them a card if they're not. But like, if I did the Prozac Christmas cards with Prozac cookies, they would just assume I'm on Prozac.
You could just be making fun of me.
Right, it's true. And the Prozac Christmas card, I thought about it because I was thinking I could only give it to people after I say, do you celebrate Christmas? And then I was like, oh no, there's this one guy at work who's Jewish. And I could just change it. I could like, I could just take the colors and just make them blue and white, you know, just the photograph. And then like, in the part where it talks about Prozac Christmas, I could just X out Christmas and put Hanukkah. I think that'd be funny. Like, Christmas is crossed out and Hanukkah is written over it. And the keeping the last line, this Christmas time, how sublime, Hanukkah will be.
It was surely cold, blustery North Pole that night, years ago. It was the night before Christmas Eve. Santa Claus was in his bed, all covered up. With him was Robbie, his chief elf. Let's pretend we were there.
Then it's right to sleep. Santa can't come unless you're asleep. Okay. Long, long ago, in a place far, far away, there was a couple of young newlyweds. They were traveling and had just arrived in a little town by the name of Bethlehem. They were exhausted from their trip and were looking for a room for the night. The wife was also very pregnant and could have her baby at any moment, perhaps even that very night. The couple searched all over Bethlehem, but there was only one hotel in the entire town, and every room was occupied. The newlyweds pleaded to the hotel manager to let them in, even if only to share a room. But the manager was insistent that there was no place at all for the couple to sleep. But he offered to let them sleep in the barn behind the hotel. Having no other choice, the young man and his wife went back to the barn to prepare for bed. It was crowded with all kinds of animals. Kangaroos and dolphins and brontosauruses and Teletubbies. But they found a spot of soft hay next to a manger and laid down there to sleep. The young woman joked to her husband, "Well, I guess if the kid plops out here, I can just put him in this manger." The two laughed, but then suddenly as the young woman closed her eyes, she indeed began having her baby right there in the barn. After much interesting language, she gave birth to a beautiful baby boy and laid him in the manger, just as she had said. And the boy, sleeping in that humble manger, glowed with a holy light. She named him Frankenstein Appleseed. But today, we know that little baby as Santa Claus.
and we know his mother as Wonder Woman, and his father as Jack Frost. Then, as the baby glowed in the manger, a beautiful light appeared in the night sky. And then from behind the clouds came a million flying leprechauns, beaming with brilliant heavenly light. Between the leprechauns and the baby, it was so bright you could have gotten a tan in less than an hour, even without oil or accelerator. Well, one leprechaun flew out from the rest and hovered above Wonder Woman. He said to her, "Fear not, for I bring you a pile of gray toys. For unto you is born this day in the city of angels a sailor, which is Santa the Claus." And then the whole host of leprechauns exploded into song. Jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin laid an egg. The Batmobile broke its wheel, the Joker got away. When the leprechauns finished their song, they disappeared into the night sky. But the pile of gray toys the lead leprechaun promised Wonder Woman never materialized. But before she could notice, three wise men abruptly entered at the barn. Wonder Woman grabbed a broom to attack them, but they explained that a leprechaun had appeared to them too and told them to come to the newborn child. The wise men's names were Dracula, Cupid, and Frosty the Snowman. They came to worship the child and brought holy gifts, chocolate bunnies, jack-o'-lanterns, and turkeys with cranberry sauce. All of the barn partook of the wonderful gifts and praised the beautiful, still glowing child. But then, Jack Frost remembered that the evil king Scrooge Presley, who ruled all of Bethlehem, had just that night sent out a decree that all male newborns should be captured and brought to his royal palace, where they would be baked into pies for the king's winter festival. So to keep their son safe, Jack Frost and Wonder Woman decided to put him in a rocket ship and send him to the planet Krypton, where the evil king Scrooge Presley couldn't eat him. They launched the rocket ship into the sky and waved goodbye to their newborn child. But the rocket ship only got as far as the North Pole, where it hit an extremely tall pine tree and crashed into the earth. That's where we get the tradition of the Christmas tree. Fortunately, the rocket ship crashed near a pack of friendly flying reindeer, out gathering food and crashed rocket ships. They found the baby and adopted him. And the young Santa Claus grew up with the reindeer, living off holly berries and candy cane bushes. 200 years later, Frankenstein Appleseed formally changed his name to Santa Claus, later changing it again to Santa Claus Incorporated. And after conquering and enslaving a neighboring village of elves and using genetic engineering to breed a master race of super-fast flying reindeer, which he called the Mach 50, he began using his North Pole headquarters to make toys and bring those toys every Christmas Eve to good children all over the world. Good children just like you. But he can only come when they're sleeping. So it's off to sleep for you, little pumpkin. I'll see you in the morning. Merry Christmas, darling.
Wow, that was a great party. Thanks so much for coming. It could never have been this great without you. Everyone have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a joyous Kwanzaa, a respectful Ramadan, a peaceful Tet, a spectacular Solstice, a fabulous Festivus, a savage Eurythmus, a perfect Myuria, and a shining Baidu Jikong Gong Jing Jiao. Bye, everybody.
This has been the EdShep Radio Experiment. Thank you for listening, and tune in next week. This is EdShep signing off. Beep, 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 beep.
You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.